It is certainly a sign of spring when those spring migratory birds come through. Whether they stay for a few hours or a few days, it's always really a treat to see them visit our parks, our natural areas, our backyard bird feeders sometimes as well. Hi, Larry Mueller here. It's no surprise that these incredible migratory journeys can be difficult and dangerous. And I know a lot of us would love to know how we can help. And with us today, we're going to learn about a way we can help, the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative. Kim Grevels is the coordinator of the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Kim, welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry, for having me on the show.
And we have by phone Dave Ewer. Dave is a senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy's Michigan chapter, a partner in the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative. And Dave, thank you for joining us today as well. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here, Larry.
Thank you so much. Well, we have lots of things we can talk about today, and wondering if you keep track of the birds that migrate through your area. Maybe you've seen a lot of migrants this spring. You take any measures to help provide a little respite for those birds that are traveling through? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Dave, we'll start with you. What are the needs of these migratory birds?
Well, it's a great question, Larry, and migratory birds have a really complex life cycle because they occur in different parts of the continent or the country or even different continents depending on where they breed, where they winter, and then the stopover sites along their migratory route, where the stopover sites are places that birds will stop en route between their breeding and wintering areas to seek food, have shelter from weather, and avoid predators. So it's really important to protect their breeding areas, their wintering areas, and this whole chain of stopover sites, each of which is different from each other, so the birds have to be adaptable all the time. And even between different years, a given site may be really different. Say, if you're in the Upper Peninsula this year of Michigan, there's still 3 or 4 feet of snow on the ground right now, whereas last year there was no snow whatsoever, and the birds are constantly having to adapt to these different conditions. So it's a tough road for these birds, and there's pretty high mortality of these birds during migration, and hence the importance of looking at their stopover sites.
Yeah, and the reason they die primarily is it. What's going on?
Well, there are a number of factors. Under really extreme conditions, say if a bird arrives and a snowstorm comes, birds will starve. There are also cases where other birds that aren't normally predators but who also have a lack of food during the snow will prey on the birds. And sometimes it's just lack of food. They'll get up too early, the food isn't available, and that may cause them to die as well. Okay. And then predators along the way, and particularly in the Great Lakes, a lot of migratory birds concentrate along the shoreline, which are also migratory corridors for many species of raptors.
Yeah. Kim Grevels, what species do pass through the Great Lakes area? So many.
Yeah. Well, we have over 140 species that regularly pass through Wisconsin on migration, and they include everything from something as rare as a Kirtland's warbler to birds that are more common, like American robins and broad-winged hawks. And we see all the northern forest species that breed up on the tundra, such as the shorebirds that come through, like Dunlins and sandpipers. And we also have the boreal forest breeding birds, the neotropical migrants, the long-distance migrants, many of which have declining population trends, are a particular concern for migration. And we can see them all. It's wonderful to have them come through because it's an opportunity to see a bird that doesn't breed here, doesn't spend its winter here, but just stops briefly, and it's an opportunity to see the bird without having to travel far. And it's really important to protect the sites for these birds so that we can continue to see them into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative is, I guess, meant to help those birds.
Yes, it is. It's particularly focused on protecting migratory bird stopover habitat in Wisconsin's Great Lakes basins.
Yeah, and how do you do that?
Oh, well, we have a variety of ways in which we do that. And we are, just to describe us very briefly, we are a multi-partner initiative where the partners come together to identify and prioritize sites for protection. And it's the sites where birds use during their migratory seasons in both the Lake Michigan Basin and Lake Superior Basin of Wisconsin. And we have a couple of tools that we've developed. First of all, we collected data from experts on known stopover sites in those areas. And we use the habitat characteristics from those sites and a combination of that and the literature and expert opinion to develop stopover habitat models, as we call them. These are spatial GIS computer-generated models that help us predict where birds might be concentrating that we don't know about so that we can go and look and find out, be sure they're there, and then prioritize the sites in order to protect them in some way. And protection measures include, it could be a land acquisition or an easement with a landowner to protect it from development. It could be a habitat restoration that's done or an enhancement to an existing habitat where invasive species are removed and native trees and shrubs are planted that provide the appropriate cover and food for birds. And it could also be something that's done in a person's backyard. People can do this in their backyard, plant native trees and shrubs. And so we do education and we hold workshops and train people how to make more habitat and enhance habitat for migratory birds.
Very cool. And Dave Ewart, why is Michigan, the Michigan chapter of the Nature Conservancy, involved in our Wisconsin initiative?
Well, this effort is really a regional effort. It just happened to start in Michigan. And as Kim has already pointed out, these migrants are coming from many, many different areas. They have a lot of migratory routes, and they don't obey state lines on where they go. So if we don't take a regional perspective, we won't be successful in protecting the birds overall. So it's really important we take this comprehensive view and protect them throughout their range, beginning breeding, wintering, and migration, and then step it down to a more local scale, as Kim has described, to ensure that our efforts are complementary across this wide geographical expanse. And as some of these birds winter all the way down to Tierra del Fuego in the southern tip of South America, and they breed up in extreme northern Canada and Greenland. So it's a challenging task because one has to integrate all these stopover sites across their range and do that in recognition of the different economic and social considerations at each of those stops that will vary from country to country and state to state.
Yeah, that's sounds like a monumental kind of task. And we are losing, as I understand it, we're losing a lot of the habitat that those migratory birds need.
That's correct. And as Kim has implied here, areas near the Great Lakes shorelines appear to be particularly important to migrants for several reasons. One is, if a bird is caught out, a land bird is caught out over the lake at night, a lot of these land birds migrate at night. And it comes to dawn, and they're over the lake, they seek the nearest land, and that nearest land, of course, is typically the shoreline. So you get these what they call fallouts, where a lot of birds will drop down to the shoreline and concentrate there. And a lot of the shorebirds are concentrated along the shoreline as well. So given the fact that there's a lot of birds there and also a lot of development, we have some of our major urban areas near the shoreline and some agricultural land in parts of the Great Lakes Basin are close to the shoreline. It means we have to be really, really careful and strategic in where we protect these stopover sites to best benefit the birds. And the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative is doing a great job getting that started in the Great Lakes Basin.
We are visiting today with Kim Grebels, who is coordinator of the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And with Dave Ewart, Dave is senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy's Michigan chapter. Obviously, both these folks know a whole lot about birds and migratory birds, and also they know a lot about the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative, which we're talking about with them today. You may have some questions or comments. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question or a comment there at the Larry Mealer Show. And we already have some coming up, and we'll visit with our listeners in just a minute or two here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here as we talk about birds, migratory birds, and the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative with our two guests, Kim Gravels and Dave Ewart. Judith Sears-Poisson on the phones, as always, and she's taking your calls when you phone in to visit with us. Love to have you do that at 1-800-642-1234. Chris in Cooksville, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, good morning. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I used to be part of and with and had friends that were along the Cedar Grove ornithological trapping station, and it was just stunning in fall how the migratory routes, the bird life that followed the shoreline was just outstanding to watch for. They trapped birds of prey and viewed all other birds as bait. I'm sorry to say. I love birds, birds of all kinds, and I recently, and just this last weekend, heard and saw for the first time the American woodcock. Now, the male has been flying around my marsh for 3-4 days now, and it's just the first time in, I think, 18 or 20 years since I've seen one. And I wonder if there's something you might know about their migratory routes, something having changed, why it's been so long since I had one.
All right, good questions. And, well, Kim, let's start with you.
Well, birds, as Dave pointed out earlier, are flexible during migration, and they have to adapt to different conditions, and so it changes every year where they stop over. And so it could be that the conditions were right this year to bring the woodcock to your particular property, and it's lucky for you. The woodcock is in the shorebird group, but it's unusual in that it usually occupies wooded wetlands and not the open beach and mudflat areas of the other shorebirds. And it relies pretty much on the same kind of habitat that we look at for the songbirds. And so when we're protecting songbird habitat, we're also protecting habitat for the woodcock. And I don't know that we have delineated a particular route for that species. Maybe Dave has more information on that.
Yeah, Dave, any comment?
I don't know that woodcocks have any narrow migratory route. It's probably a pretty broad front, given the fact they winter across much of the southern U.S. There has been a decline in woodcock population. This is a result of succession and more forest at the expense of some shrublands, and maybe that's one reason that you have not seen as many of these birds recently, as well as comments that Kim has made.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris, for calling. Appreciate it. And Mark in Green Bay, let's turn to you next. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Sure.
I live on the west shore of Green Bay, far down to the south. There's an area called Dead Horse Bay. It's about a 15-square-mile area, real shallow. It opens up real early. And the migratory ducks really use this as a stopover place. They're breeding, they're pair bonding. And it only takes one or two boats cutting through there to really disrupt the whole thing. So we had a guy out there last weekend with an airboat going over the ice, going down through the water, chasing them down. They called the DNR about it. They said, well, there's really nothing to do. You have the rights to be able to run on the water with a boat. But admittedly, that's true. But wouldn't there be some way of closing off certain areas of the bay that they could have just for stopover spots for migratory ducks, or have a slow no wake or some kind of restrictions on boat use?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for that question, and it has been an issue with waterfowl in particular. Disturbance from recreation has been an issue for them when they need to rest and stop over for many decades now. And there has to be laws on the books in order for the DNR to be able to enforce anything. And there are currently no laws that I know of that designate certain areas as off-limits to recreation during the migratory season. On the Mississippi River, the Wildlife Refuge has implemented voluntary avoidance of certain areas where the birds are congregating. And that has worked really well. And it has been recommended that that be done in certain places along Lake Michigan, near shore areas where ducks tend to congregate, and also in some of the inland lakes of the Winnebago system. So that's been a proposal that's been out there for a couple of decades now, but I have yet to see it be implemented.
Yeah.
I think it takes local authorities, and I think it would require some local action. And
local
it's something
pressure.
that someone could do in their community, get an initiative started to get some kind of ordinance, or even if it's not an ordinance, just a voluntary program where signs are put up asking people to avoid an area.
Yeah.
Am I still on?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've tried that. And I come up against it's federal waters, it's state waters, it's open waters, and local authorities have no jurisdiction over it. And the definition of harassing wildlife seems to be so high that you'd have to actually hit them with a boat to show that you're endangering them. So it would seem that, could you go into Horicon with a jet ski and rip through the middle of Horicon and drive ducks off and say you're just tuning up your engine?
Now, Horicon is a protected refuge. That's the northern half of it is a federal wildlife refuge, and the southern half is a DNR wildlife area. And so there's protected boundaries there, and I don't think you could do that and not get fined. And so when you're out on Lake Michigan or Green Bay or even out on Lake Winnebago, there's not that same protection because it is open to the public. It is a free waterway. And that would require, action at a higher level, not the local level. I was thinking of a marsh. You were talking about a marsh that I thought was more inland. But out on the open waters, it would require action at a higher level of government, and that's through your representatives.
Your state, state or Congress people,
right,
is where you really have to start.
Right, right. The DNR does not draft legislation, and we do not lobby. That's not our role. Our role is to enforce the laws that are on the book.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for calling. Appreciate it. We have Facebook from Carrie, who said, we had a large group of birds show up in our yard around 2 weeks ago, which I didn't recognize. After looking in some books, I found they're fox sparrows, which I'd never seen before in our area. They're fun to have around as they kick up seeds below the feeder and the leaves out under the trees. They also have a pretty song, which even goes on as they're scratching up a storm. Can I expect these pleasant little birds to stay in our area, or are they just passing through? They make a nice little bird crowd out there with the juncos.
Well, some of them are certainly migrants this early in the year, and they probably will pass through.
But it does bring up the point that I wanted to make, and that is there are ways that we can, in our own backyards, help the stopover initiative. I'm sure that's correct.
Yes, that is correct. In fact, we've developed a whole workshop to train people on how to do that. It's called the Grosbeaks Galore Workshop, and we've held it for 2 years in a row in the fall at Forest Beach Migratory Preserve, a new preserve on Lake Michigan in Ozaukee County. And the things that people can do are to plant native trees and shrubs rather than the ornamentals that we typically plant. They're just as beautiful. They flower in the spring, just like the ornamentals do. And yet they provide a host surface for native insects on which the migratory birds depend. Or they also provide fruit in the fall and seeds. It depends on what species you're planting, but The natives are the best route to go because they can offer the food and foraging opportunities for these birds as they're passing through. And the bonus of it is that you're attracting birds to your yard if you want to see more birds.
Well, sure.
And one of the best things you can do is provide a water source, water that is moving, splashing, or dripping, especially will attract, it'll probably double the number of birds that come to your yard.
There we go. Jeremy in Caledonia, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was just calling in with an additional comment on woodcock in the area.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago when I was out, I exercised with my dog in an area that's between 6 Mile and the We Energy power plant. And part of it, I think, is owned by the county or state. I'm not sure. And part of it, I would believe, would be owned by We Energies. But while we were out, we flushed literally over 100 woodcock while we were out there, and it was towards dusk, and we even got to see some of their sky mating dances that they do, and saw a number that I've never quite seen before. I've seen them there almost every year, just never in this kind of numbers. My question was, if this was an area that was being managed for that sort of thing. I know they do some management activities in the area with cutting down some of the invasive plants into the fields there, but they grow up rather quickly with dogwood and things like that.
Yep.
Or if this is something that needed to be looked at getting preserved.
All right, let's go to Kim again. Kim?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what site you are referring to.
I guess part of it would be referred to as the Crestview Park. I believe it's part of Racine County Parks. There's a small campground, and then a large portion of it is undeveloped.
Okay. It's not a park that I'm familiar with, so I'm not sure of what the habitat management, if any, is happening there. I think it's great that you found a bunch of woodcock all at once, and I just don't know very much about the management of that site.
Can't help you there. I'm sorry, Jeremy, but I appreciate your call. We have Genevieve in Madison wondering what impact a huge lake like Lake Michigan has on bird migration. Seems like it's closer to an inland sea than just a lake, Dave Ewart.
Great observation. And Lake Michigan both benefits birds, and in the case of storms, it can be a disaster. There have been some cases on other Great Lakes after a storm where over 250,000 birds have washed up on a stretch of the beach. So clearly, when they're out over the lake and a storm hits, they're highly vulnerable, and that's not good for them. On the other hand, along the shores of the Great Lakes, and particularly in shallow protected bays where there's a fair bit of sediment, there are lots of larvae of a non-biting fly called a midge, and they will come out in the millions. And particularly in spring, before the leaves come out, these provide a very important food resource for the birds along the shoreline, and perhaps especially in the northern parts of the basin. So it has this really mixed effect on the birds, both in terms of food supply and lack of shelter. But also, there's some evidence coming out that around Lake Erie, for example, that the birds are avoiding flying over the shoreline. They'll fly up the southwestern shoreline, go around Detroit, and then up into Ontario. Very preliminary evidence, but also some NextRad data shows that some of the birds will hug the shoreline rather than go out over the open lake. That said, a lot of birds fly over the lake as well. So it's a kind of a complex picture depending on the circumstances and time of year.
Very interesting. Roman in Wausau, let's turn to you next. And before we go there, by the way, there's open lines. We can get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And now let's turn to Roman. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I should say I've been feeding and putting out heated water bird baths for 45 years for migrating birds and the locals. So I'm very interested in taking care of them. I read an article in Audubon Magazine about a year ago, maybe 2 years, about these cell phone towers. And I know they can put them up two different ways, and I'm sure without these support cables, it's probably more expensive. And so in the rural areas, you almost exclusively see them with these support cables that extend out quite a ways, and they all have flashing lights, I guess, at night. And I've read where these birds that are migrating that fly at night, when it's foggy or stormy, they will fly around and around these because of the lights around these towers and strike these cables. And I guess many times, depending if there's a large flock, that there could be hundreds dead under these
towers. Yeah, and let's have both of our guests comment. Kim, first, you go ahead and comment.
Yes, the towers have there have been some large kills at towers, but the good news is that there's some exciting new research that's being done on the lighting of the towers. You know, the birds that tend to crash into the towers are ones that migrate at night. That's the songbirds and the shorebirds. And they migrate at night, and for some reason, they get attracted by some of the lighting on the towers. And they found that if they just had flashing lights on the towers, and I believe it's the flashing red lights, that reduces the attraction of the birds, and it has resulted in reduced deaths of birds. And there's a new initiative that's beginning to get the word out about that, and we are working with the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative to try and figure out a way to promote the new lighting. Apparently, it's an easy thing, an inexpensive thing to be changed.
Dave, comment from you?
Yeah, well, I agree just with what Kim has said. And Joelle Gehring, who was at Michigan State, did a lot of this work in the Great Lakes region. And she's just taken a new position to work on this issue exclusively at a national scale. So I'm optimistic, as Kim is, that a solution will be found to this and help reduce the mortality. And as was indicated, it is the guy wires that are really
the big problem,
serious issue here. Yeah.
Terry and Menasha, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. You mentioned the bird kill during a storm in Lake Winnebago. We had a storm here last week, a big ice storm in the Fox Cities area and Oshkosh, and we found dead birds in a local park, a coot and a heron and another smaller, like a tern or something. And I'm just wondering if you had a report about the bird kill from this recent ice storm.
Anything? I'm sure Dave wouldn't have anything, but Kim, anything from you?
No, I haven't received any reports of big bird kills happening in the recent storm.
Oh.
I have heard of others in the past where birds have washed up on shore because a storm hit while they were migrating over Lake Superior, for example. Hunter carcasses were found on shore, and it was believed that many more died in that incident. And it's one of the perils that they face when they're migrating at this time of the year.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I read in USA Today on between flights that two turkey vultures in South Dakota came down after an ice storm, and that was about the same time.
Oh. We're talking with Kim Grevels of the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative, coordinates that initiative with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Dave Ewart, Senior Conservation Scientist with the Nature Conservancy's Michigan chapter. Michigan, obviously, and Wisconsin cooperating on this effort to provide areas, safe areas, and appropriate areas for our migrating birds as they come through our states. Julius and Tishigan Lake, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Comment on migrating birds. I lived here 24 years, and there's always loons go through at this time of the year. But the last 3 days, there's just been hundreds of them. There was a bird counter out in front of my house yesterday, and he had counted over 170 loons. And the pelicans, he said he couldn't even begin to count them. There's like over 500 white pelicans that have been on the lake since Saturday.
You know, the pelicans have been, that's a really interesting story for us because we never really had pelicans. Dave, how about Michigan? Did you have a lot of pelicans?
No, we have not until very recently, and they've recently started nesting just west of the Wisconsin line in northern Lake Michigan, and now we're seeing them more regularly. I'm not sure why the population is expanding, but clearly it is.
My daughter lives in Oshkosh, and they have an island when we go up there to visit them with hundreds of pelicans nesting on it, the white ones. And never saw them here before. Very, very rarely, like once every 2-3 years, you'd see one or two fly over in the spring, and that was it. But these have been on the lake and on the marsh behind the lake and in the trees and just full of pelicans.
Yeah, and Mississippi River, too. Kim, comment.
Yes, you know, the pelicans were here in large numbers back in the 1800s, but then they declined. In the 1900s, their populations dropped so severely that there weren't any more pelicans in Wisconsin. In the 1990s, we began to get more and more sightings of them, and by the late 1990s, we had a couple of nesting colonies here in the state, and their numbers have continued to grow over this last decade. And it's one of those good news stories, and it's great that there's been a recovery of this species.
Yeah, they're fun to watch.
They are fun to watch.
A lot of fun to watch.
Pretty in the sky.
Yeah, yep, they're pretty in the sky, and they're just fun to watch. Thanks, Julius. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Dick in Oliva. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, last night my wife came home from work, and she said that her friend had told her that all these swans out in a flooded farm field were tundra swans. In the middle of their migration, they were feeding and resting. They'd been there all weekend. So we drove down and looked, and her friend had counted. She thought there were about 100 of them out there. So I Googled them when I got home, and it said that that's very common, that they like the flooded farm fields because they like the grain. It's shallow, and they can get it off the bottom. What I was wondering about is herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers and stuff that are used, if that has an effect on them.
Yeah, okay. Dave Ewart?
You know, I'm not certain if it does. There are certain compounds, such as selenium, that are taken in with feeding by lesser scops in northern Lake Erie, but they deplete that selenium quite quickly, but I'm not sure about some of these pesticides. The persistent compounds would certainly be a problem, I would think, though.
Yeah. And Kim, a comment?
I disagree with what Dave said. I don't think we have studies that demonstrate all the pesticides what the impact might be. And certainly the more persistent chemicals are going to be more problematic.
Thanks for calling, Dick. Appreciate your call. We had a Facebook comment from Jerry. He said, toward the end of our morning watch last Saturday for the annual Midwest crane count, we were surprised with a flyby of a single whooping crane. Flew about 10 feet above the water, 20 yards away. To see this magnificent bird in the wild was quite an addition to my life list. That we were so awestruck we never even thought of taking a picture of it on our phone. Next time we will. And I think, you know, that's one of the real benefits, Dave, of having a wonderful stopover sites for all of us to do our part in our backyards. We may not see a whooping crane, but we're going to see some birds maybe that we've never seen or rarely seen. For me, a scarlet tanager, I would love to have one in my backyard. You know, a friend of mine gets one or two every year, and I'd love to have that too, and I'd love to have the habitat for a bird like that. Maybe for you as you listen in, it's a different bird. But I think everybody listening today is certainly interested in birds, or we wouldn't be listening. And Kim, again, tell us where we can get more information. Now, I have up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative site that people can go to. What are we going to find when we go to that site?
Well, this is a very comprehensive site that has lots of information. There are buttons on the front page that you can choose different pages in the website if you want to learn more about migratory birds, if you want to learn how to protect stopover habitat and what you can do. There are lists of resources available. It will direct you to other sites and other organizations that have even more information. You can learn about our habitat models, and you can learn about the projects that our partners are doing. You know, this is a partner effort, and there are many partners involved, and they have accomplished so much already in just a few short years. And we have highlighted their projects on the Wisconsin Stopover in Action page. Mm-hmm. And you can also learn about Forest Beach Migratory Preserve, which was a golf course that Ozaukee mm-hmm. Washington Land Trust converted to a migratory preserve, the first of its kind that we know of. And you can learn about all kinds of things on this site, and it's a great site to get you started and to help you locate even more information and resources.
And I want to just mention that caller Wanda was spearfishing on Lake Winnebago and saw young people in pickup trucks driving through flocks of seagulls. She got the address off the ice shanties and called it into the DNR. The DNR responded very quickly and effectively, and the troublemakers were fined a significant amount of money. So it certainly does pay. I mean, if you see something like that going on, if you can get license or, you know, whatever you can get, for information, phone it in, and I'm sure people will respond if they can.
Yeah, definitely. If it's a matter of not just somebody recreating and the recreation happens to chase birds away, but that they are directing an action against a bird that could be potentially harmful to the bird, by all means, contact your local DNR warden.
Kim, Dave, thank you both very much. Dave, appreciate all you're doing in Michigan, and obviously what you're doing over there helps us here, so we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. I just want to mention one more thing.
Sure.
That one of the best ways that people can help for migratory birds is to get involved with the Great Wisconsin Birdathon, which is a fundraising event, and they can get information about that at www.wibirdathon. That's all one word, wibirdathon.org. And that's the primary funder for the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative and many other bird conservation projects.
Birdathon. And Scott Craven's has got himself involved in that. So
yes, and you can either join a team and go out birding to raise the money, or you can just sponsor a team by pledging so much money per species found, or just pledging any amount that you want to.
So much fun to have you with us, Kim. Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
And, of course, Dave. Kim Grevels is coordinator of the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Dave Ewart, senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy, their Michigan chapter. And great to have him along as well. There are so many migratory birds in the skies above us. Really an exciting time to look up. And coming up next, we'll look even further into the skies to talk about astronomy and a variety of great events around the state for Astronomy Day. Stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.